Here in the United States, leaders have prepared for combat in the political arena in many ways, but a tradition of military service has a particular resonance. As NPR senior news analyst Daniel Shore notes in this excerpt from his introduction to a newly published edition of Robert J. Donovan's PT-109, John F. Kennedy in World War II.
Whatever happened to the willingness of those who aspired to be the nation's leaders to face personal risk in service to that nation? Since the late 1980s, the mantle of America's leadership has passed from a generation that came of age in World War II to one whose concepts of military service were shaped in the murky moral and political minefields of the Vietnam War. The reissuance of PT-109 comes at a propitious time to underscore the significance of that generational change and its impact on political discourse. What Lieutenant John F. Kennedy did in the Solomon Islands was extraordinary. His motor torpedo boat rammed by a Japanese destroyer, he dived overboard and spent 30 of the next 36 hours in the water to rescue his crew. To Kennedy, to be fighting in a cause generally understood and supported was ordinary. He was only one of seven future presidents who volunteered to serve. There was, of course, General Dwight D. Eisenhower. Then Lyndon B. Johnson, naval reservist, the first member of Congress to volunteer on the day after the attack on Pearl Harbor. Richard M. Nixon, a young lawyer, served in the Pacific as a Navy lieutenant in the Combat Air Transport Command. Gerald Ford joined the Navy as an ensign and served aboard the aircraft carrier USS Monterey in combat in the Pacific. Ronald Reagan, Army Air Corps Reserve officer, was barred from overseas service because of poor eyesight and instead made training films. George H.W. Bush, Navy pilot, was shot down on a mission to bomb a Japanese-held island and rescued by a submarine. There were many other future politicians who willingly served in World War II and did not make it to the White House. Robert Dole lost the use of an arm serving with the U.S. Army in Italy. George McGovern flew 35 combat missions as a B-24 bomber pilot operating from Italy. Sergeant Daniel Inouye in Italy advanced alone against a German machine gun nest, and his arm was shattered by a rifle grenade. Barry Goldwater served as a pilot in the Army Air Corps, came home a captain with a chest full of medals. There were not hawks and doves then. There was no soul-searching about whether this was a just war. In contrast, the future politicians of the Vietnam War generation reached arms-bearing age to confront a war without consensus and without the galvanizing impulse of a clear and present danger. Former Vice President Dan Quayle joined the Indiana National Guard. Former President Bill Clinton managed to avoid being drafted by a combination of deferments and ROTC assignments. George W. Bush, who would be president 8 years after his father, found his way into the National Guard. Attorney General John Ashcroft received 7 draft deferments for the 7 years he was eligible for service. Newt Gingrich, a great battler in Congress, did not serve in the military, nor did Senator Phil Graham. Other politicians did serve in Vietnam, such as Senators John and Bob Kerry. And there was John McCain, who endured years of imprisonment and torture as a POW in Hanoi. But Vietnam was not a generally supported war and did not elicit the reflexes that sent a Jack Kennedy into battle. World War II left this country with its head held high, celebrating a generation of heroes. The Vietnam War left this country with a divisive legacy and a less certain moral compass. And that's why it's such a good idea to read PT-109 again. It brings back the days when Americans heard an undeniable call to service in something bigger than themselves and answered in kind. This is Daniel Shore.